Welcome to NextGen Mentoring Forum. The NextGen Mentoring Forum series is to empower, educate, and illuminate individuals who are in or interested in the financial planning profession. At each forum, an expert will discuss a topic in the field of financial planning with the purpose of inspiring critical thoughts and discussions. In today's session, I have the honor to interview Dominic J. Henderson Jr. on the topic of why should you consider a career in financial planning? My name is Dr. Jolly Jian. I am an assistant professor and director of financial planning program at California Lutheran University. I am a certified financial planning professional and as well as maintaining an active financial planning practice specializing in succession program management at Value Growth Institute. I'm very honored today to have Dom Henderson Jr. Dom actually began the service in the financial industry back in 1998. Ever since the elementary school, he knew he had a mission to help people win with their money. Now, professionally, Dom has spent over two decades in the financial services. And prior to founding his registered investment advisory firm, DJH Capital Management in 2016, he spent years in institutional fixed income trading circles, real estate, and the back office of one of Dallas' premier hedge fund managers. Now, as two times founder, Dom spends his time helping both consumer and providers of financial services. Now, DJH Capital Management focuses on helping clients to make the bigger and better decision with their money, while the Jumpstart Coaching Lab educates and coaches the next gen of the financial professionals to serve the growing group of individuals seeking financial advice. Now, Dom has been featured in US News, World Report, Yahoo, GoBankingRates.com, and Investopedia Investor Insights. He was also named as one of Investopedia's 100 top financial advisors in 2021. Now he hosts the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast dedicated to helping both consumers and providers of financial services by shaping the next generation of the financial advice. Dom holds a master in securities analysis and portfolio management from Creighton University, and he is a certified financial planning practitioner. So welcome, Dom. This is quite an exciting and honored time for me to catch up with you. Before we jump off to too much questions, my very first question was, where did you grow up? And how does that actually shape who you are and what your success look like today? So kind of three questions in one sentence.
you gave me the Oprah threesome, the question after question after question. Well, great to be here and great to be making this deposit into your audience. I love to do this stuff, Dr. Jin. I think, you know, so long story short, I'm the product of a military family. I'm the oldest of three siblings that got tagged along with my dad for 22 years around the U.S., including Hawaii, where I graduated from. So I think I was just actually saying this the other day to someone. So, you know, there's a lot of social constructs in our society today that are, you know, kind of dated and Byzantine. And I think a lot of awareness has come to that in the last few years, especially in this industry with diversity, equity, and inclusion. But what I would say about my upbringing, to your point or to your question, is that being a military child, I did not have the luxury of growing up and not looking at everybody as a potential friend. It just like what, like you didn't have a lot of choices. So
it's actually an excellent training, right?
Yeah. So my outlook on people group differences, ethnicity differences. It's probably a little different perspective than most. And I think it's really helped me have a broader perspective with no matter who I work with, whether they're, you know, same-sex couples or whatever. You know, I don't have any judgment or filters because a large part of my life was spent every 2 or 3 years finding a different set of friends. So I think that that shapes a lot of who I am today.
And I think that, and I don't know if that holds true to you with that kind of upbringing, was that lots of time when I met with someone who grew up in a military environment, if you will, and there's a terminology that I heard. This was several years ago. I was out in one of the bases in Japan for a contract work. And I learned a terminology called third culture, which basically was told that, you know, you are American, but you live in a different country, but then you're not quite American culture. You're not quite their culture either. So I have this third culture. And I think that third culture, the more and more people that I found that have that kind of experience, oftentimes are very much so adaptable, very flexible, and make friends easily because of the fact that you have that opportunity of making, like you said, making new sets of friends every 2 years, sometimes even faster. So thank you for sharing that. And I think that probably gave you a very solid foundation in terms of what you wanted to do to help people. Now, as I was looking at your website, or one of the blog, if you will, and I was fascinated about learning this acronym REAL, and I couldn't help laughing about it, but tell us about what is REAL and what inspired you to come up with this, coin this particular acronym.
It's an amalgamation of a lot of different ideas and thoughts. I think at the end of the day, I probably want to be remembered as a thinker. Not that I claim some type of genius around something. Often I just put people that are smarter than me in the room, including my wife of 25 years almost. More okay, about her no, later.
I totally get that. I always tell my husband that he's smarter than me. Get that?
Okay. Yeah. You're feeding the ego. All
right,
there.
So
okay.
You're smarter than me. Right. I get that.
But what I would say is that REAL. So let's just talk about the acronym and then maybe opine on it just a little bit. So REAL stands for relatable, empathetic, attentive, listening. Because at this point, when I started thinking about this concept is really probably like 4 years ago. So right after I left working for someone and then started my own. And so, you know, you're always kind of thinking about, at least for me as a financial advice provider, is like, what's going to help move the needle with clients? Like, you know, people come to you and they have these money goals and, you know, sometimes they're all over the place. Sometimes they're not even able to articulate them. And you're like, what they really want is transformation. They may not be saying that, but that's what they want. And I was like, well, how could I develop a, you know, MO, you know, modus operandi, if you will, of what I need to be taking into a mindset that I need to be taking into a meeting dealing with a client. And so that's where that acronym came from. And, you know, a lot of Bob Vieras and Carl Richards and Kitsis and George Kinder and, you know, Bob Wagner and all these different, you know, giants of the industry that have come before me with other ideas have been weaved into that mosaic of REAL. So.
And I think that one of the biggest challenge, and you probably heard me and Sandra talk about this, is it is really easy for advisors where we are trained to give answer, but the doctors were trained to ask questions, right? And I think that in this acronym REAL here is, obviously we have that component of listening, but I think that oftentimes we don't necessarily have the empathy of listening of what the client's actually telling us. Last night I was teaching a financial behavioral class and I was talking about, you know, there are, I don't know if you are a fan of Brené Brown, I just read his recent book. she identified 76 different emotions coming through. And as I was reading through that book, and I realized how little I can describe clients' emotion, left alone my emotion. And so as we listen to the clients, are we ever able to sense what the clients are telling us? So I think that this is quite, even though it's a very simple analogy of it, but learning, detecting emotion, learning, detecting biases, is going to help us give better advice, if you will. And I personally don't believe anyone can influence or move people to do things. I really think that we have to drive the client to a point that they have to self-conclude. And without their buying, they probably won't do too much. And that probably will be a waste of their time and our time. So thank you so much for explaining the acronym of REAL. I understand that you two-time startup and you have this Jumpstart Coaching Lab. Can you tell us what inspired you to do this? This is a phenomenal type of service that you're providing. Tell us what inspired you and who do you actually help through this service?
Yeah, I think I don't want to, I'll be 46 in a week and I don't want to bore an audience that's probably half my age. I'm cognizant of that. So I want to get to the good stuff. So thank you for asking me that. It's funny, you know, two evolutions are really the genesis of Jumpstart, and it's not any more complicated than this. And my audience knows this story, but so the first evolution and idea I had, and this is just for anybody that's interested in financial services or watching this, that's thinking about innovation, right? So the first thing was, allow margin for yourself to think, because that's what I was thinking about. I was thinking about how I left a pretty good paying job with an RIA, but no room for upward mobility. And when I started my firm, I was like, I don't want to be another guy that just opened up another firm and is not really making any impact. There's dozens and dozens and dozens of RIAs. I think we have too many of them, to be honest. So like, how could I actually make a difference? And so I started looking at the trends of the industry. And my first aha was, you know what? We need to be on video. Like, nobody's on video as a financial advisor. So that was my first aha. And so I invested in that. And when I invested into that, my second aha came, which was actually from my wife, who I told you is smarter than me. She was like, so let me get this straight. You are trying to get people to trust you with their money, but you're not showing your face. And because I was doing everything like behind a PowerPoint and all this kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, I got to figure out how to get on video, real video, not just, you know, talking head type of stuff. So those two things set in motion, and investing in a video coach, starting a YouTube channel, and creating videos that I didn't agree with, but since I was paying somebody every month for advice, that wasn't my own, I got out of my own head and I just did it. So that's another free bit of knowledge. Sometimes, you know, your best ideas come from other people. But I'll say all that to say, long story short, is we started doing videos and we got traction on a particular video, which was Day in the Life of Financial Advisor. And from that, a lot of people just start asking me questions. And I ended up creating a whole community around it for a couple of reasons. The first of it is I'm only one person and I couldn't keep on answering the same question over and over again. So I was like, why don't we have a library of content for people to access whenever they want to, when I'm asleep or when I'm taking time with my family or whatever. And so that's how the YouTube channel grew. And from that, it just, the next natural step was like, we need to have a place for these people to kind of congregate and get, let's call it the next level, next evolution, be able to engage and, you know, have a community. So that was really how Jumpstart started. And we've made several changes and evolutions. I'm never afraid to blow it up and start from scratch if I think it's going to be having a better longer term impact.
It's such an interesting thing. There's several things that you mentioned. You hire a video coach. And I totally get that because, you know, at the very beginning, nobody really knew what the content's supposed to be out there. You did whatever your coach tell you to do, but naturally they do know what they're talking about. And so it sounds to me that Jumpstart Coaching kind of group over time, and who are actually in your tribe, if you will, because you just developed tribe with all these.
There's three paths that I have noticed over the three or so years that I've done this for research. What a lot of people don't know is while I was running my RIA, I partnered with a marketing firm, two advisors for about 18 months. And so I got to talk to small advisors, big advisors for a long time and hurt their pains and stuff like that, which is, that came into some of the decision too, but I digress a little bit. But anyways, the people that I've seen come through that I think that I can have the most impact, or that Jumpstart can have the most impact on, fall into three categories. The first category is, I don't know what I'm doing. I just think I like finances and I want to find out about this career. I get a lot of those people. They may be, you know, first, second, third year college graduate, whatever, or they may be, you know, one of my oldest clients is 56 years old and left, you know, now this is his encore career. So I get the gamut on that. It's just basically, what are my next steps? And they're really, really new. Then we get people that have had some type of disposition towards this for whatever reason, influences, mentorships, whatever, and they're already on a path like CFP. And so they're studying in somebody's program. They know what they want to do. They've done internships. And ideally, they want to find somewhere to work, right? Afterwards, they want to plug into an RIA or whatever. They're asking me about different opportunities with, you know, the different captive insurances or whatever. And then the last person that has come on, really, I mean, just probably by accident, but is the existing financial professional that is unhappy where they currently are. For whatever reason, right? I don't judge. It's just, you know, some firms are good fits and some firms are not. So those have been the three constituents in the community so far.
So really three camps. One is the newbies. The second one is someone who's want to be mentoring through that CFP path, if you will. And the last group is someone who's a advisor already. They wanted to jump to the next step. Now, so out of those three groups of folks that you advise or coach, what are the top three most issues that you're seeing coming through? Or top three advices or issues that you're seeing across?
So let me see if I can do this off the top of my head. I have probably like a list of 20, to be honest, but I'm going to try to go to the top three.
We won't have time for that, but three.
Yeah. Top three is to CFP or not to CFP.
Okay.
That's a very popular question. I've done a lot of videos that have gotten a lot of traction on the merits of the CFP program and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
We obviously get, is it too late? Because I get a lot of career changers that are like, what are my next steps? Is it too late? Right. You know, those 40-year-olds and, you know, like, what is it going to take for this? And how exactly would I transition this? Which is a different question than that first one, because they may not even know CFP exists. They may be trying to study for something like SIE or something like that. And then with that last group, they ask, when's the right time to leave? This answer can vary, obviously, but that's generally, you know, how can I start? How can I start my own firm / when is the right time to leave?
That's very interesting. I think that I was chatting with another university's president the other day regarding about CFP. And my comment is oftentimes is that, look, CFP is just like another standard test. You have to remember, not everyone can pass the standard test. So there are some barrier to that. But I do think that the training overall is phenomenal, because you are able to become much more educated about how to work with clients. But just keep in mind that don't get too frustrated off that, because of the fact that it is a standard test. It's trying to test the general understanding of it. And so I'm glad that to see that you have the three top questions surrounding, you know, especially the last one you said, when is time to leave? I will guess if you're thinking about it, you probably should. And it's probably, it probably takes time to plan,
Yeah, I have different opinions on this. I think, and I have very controversial opinions around CFP. So full disclosure, I'm a CFP. However, I didn't get that until after 15 years in the industry. So I heavily weight experience over education. I just do. And especially for career changers, because, you know, you're talking about a pay cut. You're talking about, if you're not single, more than one person involved in the decision. Yeah. Like there's a lot of factors going into that. And do you want to sacrifice the next 4 years of your life in, you know, pretty close to 10 grand? Like, is that the thing you need to do right now? And sometimes the answer is no. Like, to be honest, most of the time the answer is no. Because if you're a career changer, just think about this. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know that you want to be client facing doing financial planning. You might not want to do that. So I say, if you can, do stuff like the FPA externship or any of these other type of programs to get your feet wet, dip your toe a little bit, see what's out there, join things like Jumpstart, talk with people on the same path, do as much research and reconnaissance as you can. Especially at that stage in your life. Now, if you're 18 through 22 and you're already in college, especially in a financial planning program, finish that and go take the CFP while it's fresh. No doubt. It's a no-brainer to me. And even if you are disposed to that lifestyle and you got the momentum, go ahead and finish your graduate degree. It's never going to be easier than right now. Trust me, I went back and got my graduate degrees. It's never going to be easier than right now. So time is on your side with that. What I would say about the third question with that third group is what we don't need in this industry is a lot of disgruntled people starting their own firms just because they can't play team ball. So I always caution people around that because it's hard. Like not only do you need to have the credentials to start your own firm, you also need to be pretty good at the business owner skill part of it.
Oh, yeah.
And most people don't have that part. So marketing, all that stuff that goes, being able to present yourself and be able to focus on what type of client you want to help and present a succinct message to them so that they understand you from all the noise and distractions and other things trying to get their attention. That's a skill set in itself. Yes. And you're trying to master how to, you know, do financial planning, you might not want to do those two at the same time. I'm just saying.
Right. I totally get that. I was a career changer as well. So everything that you mentioned about, I've touched on where I was having a very lucrative senior executive job, if you will, and to turn that off and then jump right into a retail independent advisor. That's a significant pay cut. I mean, I always tell my clients, there's no way I can pay myself that kind of salary back then. It's just not possible because I'm too cheap to do that, right? I don't have that kind of corporate backing to do that. And so, when I do that conversion into this industry, my very first criteria was to pass a CFP exam. But, you know, I was very blessed and very lucky that I somehow ran into a CFP, did my plan, answered the questions. I realized that was the path I want to be on. And then I realized I absolutely loved it. And I know that I need to pass it before I get into it. But you are absolutely right. I was not prepared that the startup phase is so much more work than the technical side. Because the technical side, you can study, you can pair with someone, you can co-work with another person. But the startup phase of hiring my own coach on marketing side, my own sales coach, none of those things I know what to do. And as a startup company, you need clients. It's not like I remember one of the coaches told me that you have to stop being your own ATM machine because you're eating your own savings. You got to go out there, right? You have to go out there and network. And that is a skill set that needs to be built over time. It isn't something that was in me, but it took many, many years to get to that point. So I so much appreciated that you mentioned about that. It's not something oftentimes people think through it. And to your point, I did not even have the courage to do enough research. But I had somehow very lucky to have enough mentors with me to teach me along the way and coaches to teach me along the way. So I always encourage people, regardless about what industry you're going to be in, always, always consider to have mentors and coach, even if you have to pay money for it, it's all going to be worthwhile. So I'm so glad that you're doing this, because I wish that I had those coaches beforehand.
Well, that all the people that are
shorten the cycle, if you will.
All the people in the Jumpstart, they know that I preach this kind of stuff. I give them the unvarnished real truth, because you're right. A lot of people go, I wish somebody would have told me this.
Right.
And when you start thinking about the really large, what I would call asymmetrical effect that we can have on a client's outcomes, it's very important that anybody entering this industry is well aware of that. And that the fact that the right. industry doesn't really prepare people for that, it was one of the things that, you know, really, really got under my skin. And so, yeah, I just want this generation. And so I strongly believe, and I know we're kind of going a little backwards here, but like from a top down, I strongly believe that really good financial advice has the ability to change family trees. Everybody should Absolutely. Have the opportunity to have their family tree changed, which means that we got to get more great professionals into the industry and more of the bad ones out. So.
Right. And I think that.
Just math.
I think that over the history, if you will, if you look at over the past history, where we are so much focusing on the technical skill, and I kept telling people today, you know, robot can do that. Go figure out your soft skill. You need to learn how to talk to the client. You need to know how to give advice. You need to listen carefully. You know, there's so many other soft skills you could learn through this process. So let's talk a little bit about your clientele. So in your RIA world, what do you typically do to attract the right clients? So it's kind of a several bits and pieces in this question. So who is your right clients, and how do you attract that, attract them into your firm?
Yeah, I'll actually give a framework that I've used inside my community a lot, and it's what I use now. I use a kind of a hybrid of it just because I've been doing it so long now. I think a lot of people start to think, well, maybe they don't, but I think where I start is, what does everybody have in common? There's a book by Drew Eric Whitman called Cashvertising, a really small, easy read that talks about the 8 biological needs of humans, all humans. And they center around relationship significance. And of course, I always forget the third one. But the point is that there is this ethos that we're all made up of that causes us to, you know, seek to compete, have our needs met. You know, it's just think about Maslow hierarchy of needs. And I think if you start there with whether somebody wants to build retirement account because they're trying to keep up with the Joneses on a very superficial level, you know, you start there, and then we find out that, oh, they have an aging parent that they want to spend more time with, or something like that, right? You just keep on digging in those.